You may start noticing there are strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, that's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is this water called Liquid Death? Well, because it will brutally murder your thirst, and their infinitely recyclable tall boy cans are helping to bring death to plastic bottles. They also donate 10% of the profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. Those aluminum cans it comes in are recyclable and actually profitable for recycling facilities, so they won't just end up in your local landfill like plastic bottles. Go get Liquid Death at your local Woodman's, 7-Eleven, Roundy's, or Hy-Vee, or find Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, here with my co-host Dan Reese to do this week's By the Numbers, where we try and give you some important statistics and the story behind them. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. That was a pretty terrible week. Well, it was good, and then it was really terrible. So, I'm ready to look at the stats and then move forward on to week three.
Yeah, some positives, but I don't know about you, longtime Raven fan here. I'm always uncomfortable when the offense is carrying the team, but there are some pluses here that we can talk about.
It's not something we're used to, for sure. So
yeah, absolutely. So you're going to be up
all
first,
right,
Dan.
I'll go ahead. 98.3% and 711. So these numbers are probably some that you may have seen already this week, but 98.3%. is the win probability at the start of the fourth quarter based on ESPN's model. It had been 12 years since a team lost when they were up by 21 or more in the fourth quarter. During those 12 years, those teams were 711-0. So it's just remarkable to just show how epic of a collapse it was. You know, I think you don't have to tell too many fans, but it is kind of interesting to see it in that perspective. You know, you know it was epic, you know it was crazy that they were able to do that, but to actually see the number 711 to zero is just pretty wild to me.
That is ridiculous. And I believe they weren't even the highest win probability owned by an eventual loser this week. I think that the Browns versus the Jets, right?
Yeah, the Browns with the epic whatever two touchdown turnaround in under 2 minutes. That was pretty wild as well. So
yeah, just ridiculous. So well, hopefully we don't talk about another stat going the Ravens way that way for a long time. 2.39 is my number, and that's the number of heavies per offensive play. And I focus on a number of run game stats here, but that's the first of these. 2.39 is the number of tight ends plus fullbacks plus sixth offensive linemen. They had Fa Lilly in there for five snaps in this game. Divided by the total number of snaps. Now, I thought the week one number was ridiculous at 2.27, which was higher than any number last year. I believe 196 versus the Chargers was their highest of last year. I haven't gone back and checked every game, but I know it wasn't much above that if it was. So the 2.39 is the highest, I believe, ever in Ravens history heavies per play. They had four snaps of 14 personnel in this game. Now, that's not even typical for the Ravens. They usually go in 23 personnel in goal line with having a fullback, a tailback, and then three tight ends in line. That was a common one for years they would do. It didn't even feel like they had to go to a wide receiver in those situations. But now we've shifted to 14, which is just a really weird offensive formation you hardly ever see. Obviously, very high reliance on these tight end-centric packages, and that's in sharp contrast, though, with how effective the pass game has been as a whole. They've been effective passing to tight ends. They've been effective passing to wide receivers. Lamar certainly has not suffered in terms of his game so far this year, but the Ravens so far looking like they can run their tight end-centric offense and still pass out of it.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting approach that they've used, going really, really heavy. I think this week kind of got the double dose with the generally heavy approach that the Ravens had, plus a number of short yardage and goal line plays. So it kind of got a double dose of it. But it is really interesting, you know, how that while they're doing that, they still are passing a significant amount as well. So my two numbers are very related to that. It's a 7.28 and 8.39. 7.28 is the average number of defenders in the box for Miami. So that is a large number. Mm-hmm. And 8.39 is the average number of defenders in the box for the 23 run plays. So the 7.28 is the highest in 2022 so far. And the second is 6.8. So nearly half a defender fewer, which is, that's a ton. So it just shows, you know, the heavy personnel was there for us, and they countered with a ton of men in the box, or, you know, I don't know which one, chicken or the egg sort of discussion here, I guess. But, you know, the offense is on the line, on the generally kind of decides the personnel. So, you know, so I would say it was the Ravens kind of deciding to go heavy and then Miami responding and just stacking the box. And even with the run plays, the 8.39 is compared to the next highest of 7.32. So more than one defender more. Like that is an insane difference between this game and the next highest.
I think I can come up with another reason why that was happening. I'm going to let it rest till the end of my stat here, but I'll go ahead. 16 and 36 are the rushes by the running backs. And the yards they got versus the Dolphins, utterly terrible, obviously. There are some reasons for it. So you mentioned, you know, the heavy personnel is certainly something that we saw. You're able to respond with heavy personnel and in-the-box personnel when you line up in-line tight ends in particular. There was a goal line pass attempt that might have skewed it a little bit, but, I mean, that's a little bit. There's 30 pass plays in this game. So, you know, an extra one or even two defenders is only going to make a difference of 0.06. over the course of a game like this. So that's not the difference. That's not the 1.0 difference, you know, in these two numbers. But they did run a lot of short yardage in this game, and the short yardage had extremely stacked boxes. In fact, on one play where the Ravens actually passed out of a 14 personnel formation, the Dolphins rushed 10 on the play. And I'm trying to think of the number of times I've recorded a 10 on my score sheet for the number of pass rushers on a play. It's not many. And the linebacker Roberts, number 52, only really dropped out late. So the Ravens had three guys in the pattern, and all three of them were open. Ricard underneath, Andrews over the top, somebody else on the right side, we didn't even see who it was, might have been likely. But they interesting on that play that they would have that. The other thing that is causing a lot of players in the box, both on run and pass plays, are these cover zero looks. So, you know, the Dolphins are not always aware of whether the Ravens are running or passing, at least hopefully that's to be the case. But the Dolphins really wanted to go back to what won them the game last year in Miami, which is a lot of that cover zero play. And so they had the line of scrimmage fairly stacked. So obviously the barbelled rushing results, people say, well, Lamar's running, but these running backs just suck. It's not just a matter of that. It's really a matter of you know, what formations can work. That there were some problems blocking on the offensive line for run plays in this game that it could have been a little better. But basically it's just very hard to run against a stacked box. And that's why a lot of teams really prefer to employ their run game out of 11 personnel, spread out the field, use your linemen to block, but don't bother with an in-line tight end even a lot of the time.
Right. And I don't know that the spread out would have necessarily worked because of that cover zero approach. You know, they were still mm-hmm. willing to put those guys up front. So, you know, rather than kind of risk it, I think the Ravens were okay. Just kind of, okay, I know you're going to put them. I'm going to put big guys in too, and just kind of let's see what happens. You know, I do kind of wish, well, the Ravens did lean heavy on the pass because of the stack boxes and things like that. But I do wish, especially on those short yardage plays, that they, you know, kind of understood that they were just completely overpowering the line and did some more passing. You know, I think there was one out of the 10 shorter yardage plays that they passed, and it was successful. As you mentioned, they rushed all 10. So naturally it was successful when there's so many unguarded guys. It was really interesting out of those 16 plays, though, those rushing plays, that 10 of them, I think, were on the first drive. So it was a very different first drive versus the whole rest of the game. I thought that was really interesting. So,
yeah, they backed off a little bit on their blitz towards the end of the game, but they still blitzed 62% for the game. So, you know, given that, I thought it was amazing the Ravens didn't allow a quarterback hit in the game for the offensive line.
Yeah, they did a great job blocking for sure. All right, my third set of numbers is negative 0.12 and 1.74. So these are the EPA, the average EPA on late downs, so third and fourth down for the Ravens and for Miami. So the Ravens were only successful 4 out of the 13 late down plays on an average of negative 0.12. So not good. Miami, on the other hand, was successful on 9 out of the 13 late down plays for an average EPA of 1.74. That's a total EPA of 22.6. So just on third and fourth downs, they added 22.6 points. It's just remarkable. They were able to convert 9 out of 11 times when they got to third down, either converting on third or the following fourth. It's pretty amazing.
So let's break that down a little bit and do a little math here. So the Dolphins end up scoring 42 points, right? 42-38, yes.
Yep.
And they might have been expected to score 20 points in this game, just a round numberify it here. Yep. So they should have had EPA plays in this game that would have added about 22 points in total. And basically what you're telling me is 100% of that was done with their fourth down plays, their third and fourth down plays. So they had a net of roughly zero on their early down plays.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Yep, it was just all the, you know, and generally third and fourth down is high leverage plays, and that's normal. But this is extreme. 22.6 points is amazing. I don't know that I've seen anything like that, because 4 out of the 6 touchdowns were scored on third downs, including one when it was third and 13 and one that was third and 10. So, you know, those are huge swings to score when it's that long of yardage.
Yeah. Do they cap that at all? So, like, if you were in bad position and you were going to have to punt and you might have an expected points of -2 or something for the drive, or for however they look at it going forward, but then you actually get a 60-yard touchdown to Hill on the play. Mm-hmm. Do they give you +9 on that, or is it capped at +7? Do you know the methodology?
Oh, no, there's no cap. Yeah, it's just pure math, you know, pure difference on what the expected points. So if you were expected to lose points, which is the other team would gain points, not you really losing points, but the other team is expected to score, and you end up scoring a touchdown, yeah, it can be more than a 7-point EPA on a play. Wow.
Okay, that's remarkable. I know some of the things they do, they like limit the value of turnovers to 4.5 and stuff like that. There's some funky stuff going on with that. So, all right. I'll go ahead and move on here. The next one, I have another running game one. We have negative 44.4% and negative 86.9%. Now, Football Outsiders has DVOA, and they use it for everything. You have it for, and I have another statistic coming up on it. You can rate offense, a defense, a special teams unit, a team as a whole, an individual player with DVOA, and that's what those numbers are. So Kenyon Drake is last in DVOA for running backs with at least 16 carries. He is 17, and his DVOA is minus 44.4. In fact, I believe he's got something like minus 26. Yeah, there it is, minus 26. Yards above replacement. So that's 26 yards below replacement in his case on just those 17 carries. That's a yard and a half less than a replacement level player that he's done. The only guy who's lower in aggregate yards is Joe Mixon, who is minus 48. I guess we're happy to hear that, being in the same division with the Bengals. But Mixon's done it on about 2.5 times as many carries, if I recall correctly. So it's not nearly as bad on a per carry basis. And that per carry basis is what's being measured with that terrible DVOA rating. But he's not quite as bad as Mike Davis, who is last in DVOA of all running backs with 3 to 15 carries. This really bothers me that it's 3 to 15 carries. And you know, somebody with 3, there's not somebody like Mark Clayton's 2006 season comes to mind, where he had a bunch of negative plays. I think he had 6 carries that year, maybe 5 carries for minus 30. And I like it, nobody's ever going to beat this in terms of negative yards in a season kind of thing. But he is minus 86.9. And then in 15 carries, He's 38 yards below replacement. So that's 2.5 yards worse per carry than a replacement level player. So there is opposing defensive scheme playing a role. Obviously, they were running him into the brick wall that the Ravens were not able to move in the middle of the line, which is a big problem. But neither Drake nor Davis, I'm going to say this, is safe when Dobbins returns. Hill looks like now the Ravens' number one back. He did a very good job of run blocking. Yes, he made it. Pass blocking. He did a very stupid play, cutting the ball to the outside, which cost him yards. But that seems a hell of a lot more correctable than what's going on right now with Drake and Davis, who neither of whom really seems to have the stylistic fit for the Ravens in terms of the speed necessarily to threaten the field horizontally, or really in either case. So the Davis is not terrible, really good pass blocking skills. So I think Hill has already taken that third down role, and we'll see how this plays out when Dobbins returns. But I'd expect one of those two to be gone.
Yeah, the situations or the O-line has necessarily helped their cases, but they certainly haven't done anything on their end either. You know, bounce one outside, or you know, spun off a tackle, or anything really to kind of add the yards over the expectation, like you clearly showed or mentioned. And they just really haven't done anything to kind of help their cause. You know, so I definitely agree with you. I think Hill, especially, I think Harbaugh was talking about it. I think Hill seems like he's going to get more of the play time. And then I think we'll see with what happens with Dobbins as well. I think it'll be really interesting. So I'd be surprised if either of them move on, like on the, if they move on from either of them as far as the roster, because there's not really any cap reason to move from them. But yeah, I think game time came to activation for sure. Right? Yeah. I think they're going to be on the outside looking out, or on the outside looking in. There you go.
The Ravens, because of the walk-in wounded they're carried now, will be forced into decisions about those players, whether it means sticking them on IR or not. Unfortunately, Davis was a guy they could have cut for a week at the beginning of the year if they wanted to, but they certainly could have cut to make an extra roster spot for an IR player. And for whatever incredible reason, they did not do it. And they had three players that they had to basically release injured, mm-hmm. that they could have had on IR, and you know, not taking any risks losing, like including Dalen Hayes. And I don't know if he's supposed to come back or not this year, but he's a loss.
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate for sure. I think they were just so concerned about needing a running, you know, their full arsenal of running backs in week one, that they weren't able to kind of cut or hold him out for the first week or anything. It's definitely going to be interesting for sure when Dobbins is ready to roll, and I hope we see kind of a changing of our fortune quickly when that happens. So yeah. All right, time to change the direction and kind of look ahead. For me, with my two numbers are 5.4 million and 5.5 million. 5.4 million is the estimated current cap space based on over the cap. I say this is estimated because there's a number of things going on, number of players going to IR, things like that, moving pieces, practice squad. Currently, when I got that number, the Ravens had 51 people on the roster. And that leads to the second number, 5.5 million. And they just reportedly today signed JPP for up to 5.5 million for 1 year. Obviously, 5.5 more than 5.4. So there's going to be some sort of cap manipulation in that contract. My guess is that a significant amount of the 5.5 million is with incentives, not likely to be earned incentives, which means that they're based off of things that he didn't hit last year. He only had 2.5 sacks last year, so it's really easy to use a sack number that he'll likely reach in order to kind of move that incentive. So whatever he earns from a not likely to be earned incentive moves to next year's cap instead of this year's. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way they do it.
He did have fairly significant playing time last year, right? So they don't have some easy playing time hits that they could go for. It's I don't know how you feel about this one. I'm not super excited about the Jason Pierre-Paul signing. I mean, he's almost 34 years old. He will be, in fact, on New Year's Day. You know, a guy coming off a bad season at that age is not exactly the guy you want to focus a lot of your limited remaining resources on. Would you be surprised if it's more than a minimum contract with incentives?
You know, I'm upset that it's this high of a number, period. I was hoping it would be a minimum contract. I knew that as soon as, you know, he was holding off and went away, you know, the Ravens were in terrible negotiating position, right? Everyone knows they need an edge. There are no edges out there. They need one now. He's the best one on the market. Like, there's no other option for them, really. I guess a trade. But, like, really, he was in complete, like, the power position in this negotiation. So I'm not surprised that they overpaid. In my opinion, they overpaid. But, you know, I would love to see it be something like $1.5 million guaranteed, and the remaining four is all in incentives based off of sacks. Like, you know, and kind of building, you know, $1 million for five sacks, $1 million for seven sacks, $1 million for
eight sacks. My friend. Well, I would love that too. I'm really afraid they've given away about what, $4.5 million out of maybe $250 million next year in cap. Yeah. This is a not insignificant, you know, 2% of the cap or thereabouts that they've spent already in a year where, you know, they're going to have a lot of moving pieces, but one of them being Jackson potentially on a franchise tag.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure, the details, and he better be able to show up. I do think they had to make a move, though, because I think they're just playing Houston so many snaps that, you know, they need to do something. Otherwise, they're going to risk Houston's injury, and then they're left with nobody, even when they get reinforcements back. So,
right. Yeah, it's tough right now because Owe is playing out of position and obviously having some difficulties of his own. All right, I guess we're ready to move on here again with some of the talk of the town. I just want to frame something up as the fastest men. We had a lot of that this week. So my two numbers are 21.6 and 27.79. 21.6 was the speed of Devin Duvernay on his kickoff return touchdown. And again, that's the top speed. They don't ever tell you speed over the entire run, which I'd really be interested in knowing, by the way. And it would also, it's not easy to calculate because it's not just, you know, 103 yards that and you could maybe count up the seconds using the click method on your DVR. It's not that easy because there's some lateral movement and, you know, the total yards traveled are not exactly 103. It's probably, you know, 108 or something, maybe on a run like that, maybe even a little more. And so you don't really have a great measure of speed, but they said it was a top of 21.6. Bateman, a top of 21.48, higher than Marquise Brown's top of 21.3 ever, which I don't even believe came as a ball carrier. It was on the 65-yard touchdown pass in Denver where he basically dove in the end zone for the ball, so I don't think it was as a ball carrier that he had that. So really exceptional number for Bateman. And then Jackson reached 20.48 on his TD, which was still the 20th fastest of the week. So excellent run by Lamar. Kind of looked like he had a piano on his back at the end of that run. I don't think it was all about the Jumbotron. I think it was, you know, he was really trying to figure out how am I going to avoid this tackle, reading like leverage out of the back of his head almost as he's going down that field. But I want to give you a framework for comparison. That was the reason why I did this. Usain Bolt's record of 9.58 in the 100 meters translates to 23.35 miles per hour over the entire run. Okay. And he reached a top estimated speed of 27.79 miles per hour, somewhere between the 60 and 80 meter mark. So something about that is important, that it's unusual to find on really short running plays, like, you know, 6, 8, 10 yards. There are a couple of them every week, the really fast numbers, because it takes humans a while to accelerate to top speed, and they can't usually do it, you know, right from a start like that. And the other thing is that just running with football equipment and whatnot is a lot harder. So even though these are exceptional athletes, and we're not certainly saying Lamar or any of these other guys is slow, track stars are just meant to be track stars, and they you know, they have some several advantages to do so, including running out of blocks, for example, and running on a straight track and not having anyone trying to tackle them, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I thought. Well, all those plays were amazing. You know, first off, the Bateman catch. What a great move he made with off the line of scrimmage, and then it was just see you later. That was just amazing that he was able to break from that defender so quickly. Duvernay, such a I feel like kickoff return for touchdowns are such a rarity nowadays, and just amazing that he was able to pull that off. And what a game changer! What a way to start the game off, right? And then Lamar, it was really very cool to see him punishing them so badly for stacking the box. As soon as he got beyond 3 yards, everyone was, you know, or whatever it was, maybe not three, but five, you know, he was beyond everyone at that point already. So it was pretty amazing. You know, as soon as he broke through that line.
Now, you know, a lot about rush yards over expected and the other models that are out there for FastR and that use the FastR data or the tracking data, maybe more accurately. I noticed that the rush yards over expected for that were something were in the 70s for Lamar. It wasn't like, and you know, if it wasn't 50 over average, say. And I'm trying to think of where they would handle the handoff on a quarterback run. I don't know if you happen to know this, but I mean, you know, it's a designed run play. There is a mesh point. I think there was on the play. I have to really think back to he did, I believe, make a pull and go. But is it at that point they're judging the expected yards? Because as soon as he's at the line of scrimmage, we're looking right down the line of scrimmage. There was nobody there.
Right.
I mean, it was 70 yards right then.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not really sure. I know some of those models for sure struggle with when to kind of start the clicker or whatever on that sort of play. A lot of them don't even do it for QB runs because of that exact reason. They don't have a starting point to kind of snapshot and look at where the O-line compare. But that's, you know, that just shows kind of how amazing, you know, the read of the hole and to get through it, right? Like, it kind of parted, he made the right reads, got through, and then it was gone. So cool.
One more thing to say about that. One of the great blocks of the season by Ben Powers on that play. And Ben Powers had a terrible week one, a bad week one. But on that play, he pulled and blocked two guys to kick them out that allowed Lamar to move right through that hole. But rarely do you block like that needs to be called out.
Right. Nice. Good for him. You know, that's awesome. So, you know, he hasn't had, he's had some struggles. So that's great that he was able to make such a great block on a huge play. So, all right. My last number is 8. And this number is kind of shows up a couple times in this story. So the Ravens are ranked 8th in pass rush win rate by ESPN with a 47% pass rush win rate. Oddly enough, or coincidentally enough, or whatever, Patriots are also ranked 8th on the other side with a pass block win rate of 66%. So it'll be 8th ranked pass rush versus 8th ranked pass blocking, which I think will be a really a key matchup in this week's game. Michael Pierce is ranked 7th amongst DTs across the league so far. And Michael Oweno is ranked 8th. And Cole Strange, the rookie, is ranked 10th amongst guards. And David Andrews is ranked 1st, tied first with 100% win rate amongst centers. So the interior O-line for the Patriots is extremely solid on pass blocking. And at least in week one, the interior defensive line was very solid with pass rush. So, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see whether the interior defensive line for the Ravens or the kind of thin edge players for the Ravens can get pass rush on Mac Jones, because, you know, I do think, you know, that's an area where if you can get him flustered, he's really, really struggled when under pressure. So,
yeah, I'd really like to understand ESPN's numerator and denominator on pass rush win rate. So do they use a 2.5 or 3 second standard? What constitutes a win? You know, what do they exclude if the ball's out quickly? Do they exclude the play from pass rush runway, you know, analysis? But I'd really need to understand that, because that's a lot higher of a win rate at 47% than what I've charted for the Ravens. And I don't know if they're doing it every player individually. Sounds like they are, if you have, you know, win rates by individual.
Right. They are, yeah. they're doing it. It's not 47% like on average, like, you know, say you have three mm-hmm. or four defensive linemen, you know, that on average two are winning. It's mm-hmm. on average that I don't know if one win or what. So that's a good question on what constitutes a win for the line. But I do know that, that the percentage for Pierce was 14% or something like that. So it's a significantly lower percentage win rate for defensive linemen on an individual basis than it is for the team basis. So I assume or suspect that it's like one of the defensive line win, and that's a, you know, that's considered a win. So if they impact the pocket, that's considered a win.
Okay. All right. I mean, I agree. That does make sense. Some interesting draft things recently. Cole Strange, of course, the guy who's drafted, I think, 29th overall in one of the huge reaches mm-hmm. of this draft.
Yep.
Very odd game. There's only one cut up of him playing against Kentucky to really look at, even in your drafting, because he went to Tennessee Chattanooga, really played at a player was hard to play. And then Michael Ueno, of course, is the guy who the Ravens took Ben Bredesen instead in round 4. And I've, you know, been crying a lot about him going to the Patriots. Had a guest on who said that Ueno is a great individual blocker, but he's somehow not good at either picking up blitzes or picking up things he's supposed to do. So counter argument from the know your foe guy, was kind of interesting. All right, let's move on. I got one more left. 1, 21, 1, and 3. The Ravens ranks in offense, defense, special teams, and overall DVOA through 3 weeks. So they're number 1 in offense. They're number 21 in defense. I don't think there's a surprise on the 21 in defense. Number 1 in offense is great. And they're number 1 in special teams, which I don't know if we'd have guessed that was true right now. DuVernay got a touchdown, but the punting game has been just fairly average, it seems, and Tucker hasn't done a lot of chances. And then they're number 3 overall. There's another factor they use called Dave, which includes their preseason expectations. If you take that, they're 2nd overall, only behind Buffalo. If you don't take their preseason expectations, they're also behind Jacksonville right now, is the 2nd best team in football by DVOA. Kind of surprising. And by weighted DVOA, they're also 3rd behind Buffalo and Jacksonville. What I'm trying to get to with this stat is they have not played great teams so far. At least we don't think so. We don't know how great Miami is going to end up being. They're hot right now. But this is kind of a don't worry, be happy stat. We're in an unusual position of having the offense lead the way for this team when we've been used to years of the defense being the better unit. Even younger fans can you know, think back to the mid-teens into players who, you know, teams being led by the defense, even though you know, Joe Flacco was still around. The offense just wasn't the strength of those teams at that time. But while I think there's a lot to be worried about from this last game, there's certainly a lot to be worried about in terms of the secondary coming back to life. I'd like to get your opinion, Dan. How concerned are you about this team right now in terms of their ability to defend the pass completely torpedoing the season?
Yeah, I think it's you know, I think it's entirely dependent on health. You know, I think we got some really good news about Humphrey coming back and practicing a good amount this week. I think Peters practiced a majority of this week as well. Stevens as well. I think Hamilton's just going to continue to improve. I think, you know, the communication there was obviously an issue. I think the rookies are going to continue to improve. So I really think the defensive backs is an area where they really struggled in week 2, but I don't think that that's going to be – I don't think – that's not something I'm concerned about for the long haul of this season, assuming we can stay healthy, knock on wood. You know, I am concerned about the pass rush. I am concerned that the edge, that there's not enough depth there. But one of the things that's interesting about this league is that so many teams have a quick pass or, you know, hot routes or whatever it is, you know, it's short time to throw. That pass rush it's harder and harder nowadays to get home. So, you know, I'm not sure that is as crucial as it used to be. You know, I think you have to get home so that you can't tax your defensive backs too much, but I don't think, you know, immediately winning is as crucial as it was a couple of years ago, even. But, you know, I'm more concerned about the edge players than I am the DBs. So,
okay. That's an interesting perspective to look at it because of the number of hot reads that the actual importance of the edge position may have gone down. And I think there's merit to that. I mean, I think that's really a different way to look at it. I thought the cornerback situation was very thin coming into the year because I didn't really trust Fuller, and it doesn't matter now whether we trust him or not. Right. He's gone for the year. So, and Peters, I just didn't have a good read on how quickly he was going to be back. And it's great to see him in week two, even though I don't think he really played particularly well.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I think he was okay. You know, I think he was definitely not his normal self. I think, it was a hard game for him to kind of make those gamble plays and things like that. So, and I think that sort of play style will do better when everyone else is full strength around him, you know, when he is allowed to gamble more. So, you know, he didn't look bad, but he didn't look himself, I don't think. So, yeah. But I think, you know, I think the offense is exciting and the special teams is exciting as well. You know, I think Stout has looked fine. I think he's going to continue to improve. Tucker is Tucker. So I think, you know, two out of three as number one and the defense, I think will improve from 21. I don't think they'll stay there. So, like you said, I think there is a lot of reason for optimism for fans out there. So I know it was a rough week, but I really do think, you know, focus on the positives and I do think it will turn around. So.
All right. Okay, another big one coming up this week against the Patriots. Dan, always a pleasure to do this with you. Always really appreciate having a great co-host. You can never say enough about that, but tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, reach out on Twitter, DP Reese, and then the number 8. Happy to talk Ravens, throwing out some stats now and then. You know, it's a lot more fun after a win, so hopefully we'll get one this week, and you know, I'll throw out a bunch of stats about you know, how we were able to get our first win in Foxborough. So
you got to remind us of that. We have won actual regular season in Foxborough. Yes. All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up with a DM on Twitter. They're always open. We have some cool stuff coming up for you. A great talk with Daniel Wilcox the other day, the former tight end for the Ravens, about his experience at training camp. It is not to be missed. Lots of very heartfelt things you will not ever learn, even on Hard Knocks. But I'll give you one of the things he said, which was just hilarious to me. It broke me up for the next couple of questions, was that he said, you always smell like some sort of ointment when you're at camp because they're always rubbing something on you. And you're good rookie hazing stuff. You'll love it anyway. Please give that a listen. Dan, we'll be back next week, of course, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.